Welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers. This is your host, Karma Spence. What you are about to hear was originally recorded in 2010 as research for my book, Public Speaking Superpowers. After going through all this content, I've decided to release these 80-plus recordings as a bi-weekly podcast. I hope you enjoy. Hello, and welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers. This is Karma Spence, your host. Today, we are speaking with Joel Schwartzberg, who is a former collegiate national champion public speaker, a competitive public speaking coach for colleges, and Media Bistro's only public speaking instructor. He's also the author of an anthology book called The 40-Year-Old Version. Joel, welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers.
Thank you, Karma. Glad to be here.
Just so listeners can get a feel for your unique expertise, could you tell us a little bit about your journey to success in public speaking?
Sure. My journey began actually in middle school when I joined my competitive speech and debate team. As I competed week in and week out, I learned a lot of the tools and the tricks and the tactics that make one a better public speaker, which I honed in high school. And in college, I really was at a level at which I could use them to my success, and they helped me become the national champion public speaker in an event called After Dinner Speaking in 1990, and I was also ranked within the top 10 overall of speakers at that national tournament. And then since then, I was inducted into the National Forensic Hall of Fame in 2002, and I've coached, like you said, for a variety of colleges, including Seton Hall University, University of Pennsylvania. And then when I moved into the corporate world myself, professionally, I realized that a lot of the training I had and a lot of the training I was sharing could be well adapted for the corporate world in interviews and presentations and conferences and things like that. So I used them to my own success, and that's what inspired me to approach Media Bistro and explain to them how it could be successfully used by their members, and so that's how the course was born. I very much enjoy public speaking, not just the dividends and the fruits of that, but the process of it, and that's why I continue to coach people and to share these tactics.
And, you know, just for those people who are listening who don't know what Media Bistro is, that is a resource for writers and editors, correct?
Correct, and anyone involved in media, professionally or personally. It has job listings, it has courses, it has articles, just a great forum for learning and sharing information about media.
Okay, so do you believe that public speaking is a learned skill or something you are born being able to do?
I convey it as a learned skill, as a skill that trains people. I mean, even the people that are the best public speakers in the world and motivational speakers, I believe they came from a place where they realize that there were tactics to making themselves more compelling on stage or wherever, on television or on panels. And like in many other things, practice makes perfect. So these are people who have honed those skills over time. So I do believe that it's trainable, that great public speakers are not necessarily born that way, that you can take someone who, as long as they can communicate clearly and has the potential to develop confidence and overcome their fear, that person can be an outstanding public speaker.
Okay. So if you were a public speaking superhero, what do you believe would be your main superpower?
I believe my main superpower would be sort of like the siren song from Greek mythology, that through my voice, my superpowered voice, I would be able to command attention and respect and interest automatically. Now, in the real world, there are ways to actually do that. So I consider it could be a superpower, and it would be considered by many people. Fear of public speaking is the number one fear of most Americans and most people. They would consider it a superpower. So I'm going to go ahead and list that, describe it as a superpower.
Okay. Now, what kind of advice would you give someone if they wanted to develop that particular power?
The main advice I would give someone is to understand that strength and conveyance boils down to one word, and I've already given it away. It's strength. That when you convey strength, you are not boring, you are commanding a presence, you are conveying a point clearly. It all comes from a foundation of strength. And in my workshops and training, what I do is talk about the different ways that people convey strength versus weakness, be it in gestures, be it in voice, be it in the way they end their sentences, and in the content as well, but mostly presentationally.
Okay. So I'm trying to kind of get a feel for really what it sounds like. There's probably what you said is a superpower, but underneath it, there's a root. And it sounds like really it's confidence in yourself and your material.
It is confidence, but it's also the conveyance of confidence. Like, You know, any superstar and even people running for president will tell you that they're still nervous every time they walk up to the stage. Most people, even professional motivational speakers, are still very nervous and have butterflies in their stomach before they begin. So for me, it's about really making people feel more comfortable in a lot of psychological levels and feeling more confident. For example, your audience, they might hate you, they might love you, they may not care, but all of them, no question, they do not want to be bored. So in that case, no matter who they are, that audience is really supporting you in that they want you to be interesting. So we don't have to pretend like your audience is interested. They actually are at the very level that they at least don't want to be bored. And once I explain that to a lot of my students, they realize that. That sort of makes sense to them. So they get a little calmer in that they know their audience is rooting for them. And then the conveyance of confidence comes across in, like I mentioned, how you end your sentences. President Obama, for example, ends almost every one of his sentences in a period versus a question mark. He doesn't say, I want to do something about healthcare. He says, I want to do something about healthcare. It ends in a period, not a question mark. That's not a question of how confident you are necessarily. It's a question of you having an ear for the way those sentences end and understanding and sort of targeting it like a pilot would target a runway, focusing your ending on that period to make a more strong point.
Now, I remember hearing about this. Apparently, it's very common for women to end their sentences with a question mark, even though they're not asking a question. It's, I think, from what I understand, it's sort of a cultural thing. It's like we're trying to subdue our own power in some way, verbally, and I think a lot of it's unconscious. So have you found in your coaching business that you have to make your women students more aware of this than your male students?
There are some subtle differences in genders between what they come for, and honestly, I actually get more women students than I get male students, and I think they're in scenarios and in contexts in which they have a lot of male colleagues, and the male colleagues' voices rise above, often, the female voices, and so what they're trying to do is compete with their colleagues and actually rise above. So to that extent, some do, I wouldn't like to stereotype them, but some do come through and have that lilt to their voice. What I explain is when you end your sentence like this, when you're talking about these ideas, you're asking your audience a question. You're asking them to affirm what you've just said as if you didn't know the answer yourself. That's what a question is. You're asking your audience for affirmation. When you end in a period, you're making a declarative statement. So whether it be a man or a woman looking to change that ending, not just for its own sake, but to literally take them from asking their audience if what they're doing is okay, to a place where they're actually making statements and conveying information authoritatively to the audience.
What kind of tips do you give for not only becoming aware of your asking questions, but in putting a stop to that when you need to?
The biggest thing we do is a little exercise, which I'm going to give away. And what I ask people to do is to replace words with numbers. In other words, if someone gives a speech and they have the content all in there, they'll be thinking about what they're saying as much as how they're saying it. I want to remove the what they're saying part because you're either going to know what you're talking about or you're not going to know what you're talking about. I want to concentrate more on the interpersonal and the nonverbal things. So instead of having people give speeches, at least at first, on topics, I actually have them give speeches on numbers. So when I say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then I say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. With those numbers, they're able to actually see, it's sort of apples to apples, the difference between the period and the question mark. Then we go actually around the room, and everyone has to say 1 through 11. And by and large, most people, 4 or 5 of those numbers will end in question marks even when they're intending to end them on period, even when they know that the point of the exercise is to end them on period. It just shows the level at which different people are in terms of being able to do that naturally.
Very interesting. First, I didn't hear it, but was when you said the second set of numbers, then I heard the difference.
Right. If I said just sentences, it's a little harder to hear because you're concentrating on the content. This is what I call surrogate content training. I actually have my students stand up and give full speeches 1 through 13 just so I could see their nonverbals, how they're ending on periods, how they're conveying with strength, how they're conveying with weakness. And then we're able to isolate those things without worrying about did they make that specific point or did they ramble on at this point, because that's secondary. I want to first concentrate on these nonverbal conveyances of strength or weakness.
So it sounds like one very powerful way to develop the superpower that we talked about, which was conveying strength, is to really become aware of how you end your sentences.
Absolutely. If you watch, like I said, President Obama, somebody has gotten to that guy, and I mean it in a good way. You can see, watch the next time he speaks, and really watch and listen with your ear to those end of sentences. He is purposefully ending his sentences on periods. And I think strong motivational speakers, you'll find that they do that a lot. Now, some will say if you do that too much, you won't sound conversational. But I'm less worried about making people sound conversational. I think it's natural for us to sound conversational. Once you're speaking about something about which you're interested, you're going to sound conversational.
You're probably going to have some questions in your presentation anyway, so there will be vocal variety.
Right, and lilts to your speech and those kind of things. So what I say is don't make every sentence end in period. That's not the goal. The goal is to train your ear for it, so you can do that as often as possible. But very importantly, in your speech will come all these what I call milestones. Points. This point you want to make. Here's what I want you to take away. At the end of those points, especially, that's when it's most important to end with a period.
Yeah, especially if you're doing a sales presentation and you're trying to do a call to action.
Absolutely.
Call to action should end in a period.
Absolutely. And I often encourage my students in the text to be very explicit about those calls to action. Here's what I want you to know. Here's the bottom line. If you're going to leave this presentation with one idea, this is it. You need to invest in plastics or whatever it's going to
right.
be. But as long as you're setting yourself up for it, and you know, it's a lot like a gymnast. It's a lot like Mary Lou Retton, or I should update my time into the more current gymnast. But anyway, I'm going to think of Mary Lou Retton. So it's just like her coming off the parallel bars or the balance beam and nailing that landing. And for us, rhetorically, nailing that landing means ending with a period.
Got it. Well, thank you so much, Joel, for sharing your special superpower with us today. This is Karma Spence, your host of Public Speaking Superpowers, signing off.
Because this was recorded a few years back, I've cut the speaker's contact information from the recording because it may have been out of date. If you would like to learn more about today's speaker, go to publicspeakingsuperpowers.com/featured speakers. And click on his picture. I'm working to keep the information there as fresh as possible.